Hi, and welcome to the Sexy Aging Podcast. I'm Tracy Monoknuku, a midlifer, menopausal, and at the juncture of life where I decided that I was going to kick over my bucket list, starting with this podcast. Since then, I've written a book, My Menopause Memoir, set up a website to support women through the menopause transition, developed an online course for menopause, and thrown my passion for fitness and wellness into an app specifically made for women in midlife and menopause. I also love delivering workshops virtually and in person to support women in the workplace when it comes to, you guessed it, menopause. If you're interested in finding out more about these projects, I've added the links in my bio, and I offer podcast listener discounts in the show notes just for you, so check those out. As an indie podcaster, that means that no one is paying me to produce this podcast. I want to bring you relevant, interesting, and engaging guests. By following and sharing the podcast with others, I can continue to make the podcast episodes and give you more of what you want to listen to. So let's crack on with today's interview. If you haven't yet had a chance to check out my Menopause Management online course, then I have great news for you. This course is now just $27. The course covers all the questions you have on menopause and how to manage and support your symptoms. Topics include hormonal fluctuations that instigate menopause symptoms, the sleep and stress connection, how to exercise, what to eat, and the importance of a community during this life stage. There is over 2 hours of video content and PDF checklists you can download, including a menopause symptom tracker. This course has had hundreds of participants and has a 5-star rating. The link to the course is in the show notes. In this episode on the Sexy Aging Podcast, I had the pleasure of speaking with Penny Ashton as we unpack the topic of dysmorphia in midlife. We covered a lot, and I laughed a lot. Penny is a self-employed performer, actor, writer, podcaster, poet, and wedding celebrant. I came across Penny through her podcast called Showy Ovaries. Hilarious. I'm not going to reveal anything more on Penny in my intro, as you'll want to hear it from her. We cover, in no particular order, porn, Jane Austen, imposter syndrome, diets, Jenny Craig, bodybuilding, liposuction, selfie angles, that Gwyneth Paltrow interview, our current sex life status, and slut shaming. It's a lot, and there's a few expletives, so I'd highly recommend, if you love listening, that you also check out this episode on my YouTube channel, because watching Penny is a show unto itself. All the links are in the show notes. Well, hey, and welcome to the Sexy Aging Podcast. I've got a little backstory to share with the listeners here. This is actually the second time that I have interviewed Penny Ashton, extraordinaire, and I'm going to let her share everything about everything that she does here in New Zealand. This is being recorded in New Zealand, and the reason that we're doing take two is because I had a technical hitch with Zoom. I lost a few recordings through the Christmas break, and Zoom's contacting me, and it's going back and forth, and they can't find the amazing, incredible interview that we had, Penny. And so, A, I was pissed off about that, but B, I get to talk to you again.
Win-win, and I get to have some product placement in the background because I'm back at my house now. I was doing Olive Copperbottom in Wellington when we talked, and that was, that was a while ago now.
Yeah, it was just before Christmas.
Yeah. This year is gathering pace already.
It is, isn't it? So how about we go straight to that place of what are you doing, who are you, and share your story. And your story is actually the topic of today, which is talking about how women in midlife feel about their changing bodies. I love your story, and it's just perfect to share. So how about you start from, you know, what is it that you're doing in New Zealand? You're a bit of an icon in the theatre space. I can't wait to see you in person, and I am, you know, fangirling, tracking everything you're doing, doing lots of loves on social media. But at some point, I'm definitely going to rock up to one of your shows or whatever. You've got a lot going on, so share that with us.
Yes. So I am New Zealand, born and raised, and I am I call myself an entertainer because I do lots of different things, because I have been a self-employed entertainer for 23 years. And the only way to do that is to do lots of different things. So, you know, I started doing performance poetry. I always wanted to be a performer, an actor, et cetera. Like, I did theater at university. I applied for drama schools, but I didn't get in. So then I went off to the UK and I was a temp and a barmaid, you know, and then I came back to New Zealand. I got into a Midsummer Night's Dream that was the Summer Shakespeare in Auckland. And just then, like, this gradual, you know, clawing of your way up. Like, at first it's really hard, you know, I'm temping. Like, my accountant was like, you've been doing shows for a while and they don't make any money. And it's like, because everyone thinks there's an overnight success thing, but it takes a long time. So first of all, I started doing performance poetry because I just wrote a poem one day about being so frustrated that I wasn't performing, hilariously. And then that led to me doing performance poetry, and I've represented New Zealand in poetry slams in the UK. I just got back from WOMAD, where I run a poetry slam, and I've run ones in the Auckland Writers Festival and things. Poetry can be a little harder to sell than some other things. So then my next solo show was about the history of the sex industry, which strangely sells a little better. And that was called Hot Pink Bits, and it was about prostitution and pornography and stuff. And then I did a very predictable pivot at that point into Jane Austen. Yeah, exactly. Of course, porn, Jane Austen, makes perfect sense. But I'm also an improviser. So I did theatre sports all the way through school and that. And I had done some improv Jane Austen. And so we did a show called Austen Found, the undiscovered musicals of Jane Austen. And then that sold really well, but there were a lot of us in it. And I was like, I want all of the money for myself. So I wrote because I was producing everything. And then you go, that's not enough. So I wrote a solo show called Promise and Promiscuity. And that is 10 years old now. And I've been touring that one. And then I've written Olive Copperbottom, which is a Dickensian show. And I'm just writing The Tempestuous, which is a Shakespeare show. And along the way, I do voiceovers. Like, I'm voice on Power Rangers. I do different monsters. I shrink you to my perfume bottle, and all this sort of stuff, which is bloody marvelous. I wish we had more of that. And I do background vocals in Power Rangers and Spartacus and things. I'm a wedding celebrant now, so I've been doing that for about 10 years as well. And I think that's about, and of course, the way that we are connected is that during lockdown, I was like, oh my God, what the fuck am I doing with my life now? I'm like, I'm stuck inside. I didn't do a show for 11 months, which is like the longest practically from when I was 0 to 4 that I hadn't done a show. And so I had been toying with an idea of doing a menopause podcast. I'd pitched it to Radio New Zealand and the spinoff had been turned down. And I was like, well, what else am I doing? I did an online podcasting course for about 3 hours with the fantastic Neil Thornton in Wellington. Yep. And bought my Zoom and my microphones. And I've done 63 episodes now of Showy Ovaries. As it was called, because I once got an ultrasound and the doctor said I had very showy ovaries, which felt appropriate. I don't know what it means, but they're jazz handing in there. And then here we all are. So that's what I've got improv shows coming up. I've got my new show premiering. I'm doing Promise and Promiscuity is touring the country at the moment because of its 10th anniversary, and a live podcast record, which I've been doing a little bit in the Comedy Festival with Justine Smith. That's coming up in May. And this is one of my props for the Tempestuous.
And for anyone that's not watching the video, that is a rubber chicken.
No, it's a buzzard, actually.
Oh, so sorry about that.
It's a buzzard, yeah. And the idea is when they say test your buzzards,
I got that.
Good, well done. You can come.
I'm going to come. How did you get into theatre? Like, it pervades out of you. So if anybody is listening, please get across to the YouTube channel, check out Penny for the energy and obvious passion that you are, you know, you're living and breathing it every day. And that's one of the things I love about midlife women who have found the thing that they just need to be doing every day. And so, but how did you get into it? Like, have you always been in theatre? Where did you start? Like,
yeah, I mean, it's not just a midlife thing for me. You know, the thing with midlife when you come to it is that giving less fucks. I'm also a lot sweary, so when I give less fucks about giving less fucks. So you, and also that imposter syndrome that is just sits there. Like, when I first heard the words imposter syndrome, that was like a light switching, right? Just going, oh, it's not just me.
Yeah.
You know, just the fact that, you know, I'd be at a festival overseas in Edinburgh, like in 2004 and 2005, I was over there feeling like, oh, should I really be here? You know, getting great reviews, not many people coming because it was poetry, and all this. And you just like, So to be able to slough that off and actually just come to a point where I go, I am actually good at this.
Yeah.
And actually there's not that many people that can do all of the things that I can do, which then of course you have to mitigate being arrogant and tall poppy and things like that.
But, I love it. Shout out. I'm right here with you. I do not subscribe to the tall poppy syndrome. You know, I spent 20 years overseas. I got that out of my system. I came back. It's obviously still here.
Yeah.
But I'm like, deflect.
Yeah. But the other thing I do also think that I feel is blown out of all proportion is that talent is luck. You know, you're just born being able to sing. Yes, you have to work at it. Absolutely. And if you're top of your game, but if someone can't sing and someone can sing, then suddenly they're revered, you know, and it's just pure luck. It's like privilege where you're born into and all that sort of stuff. So I've been very lucky in my life to have very supportive parents, which means that it's given me to know that I can go overseas. And if all the shit hit the fan and no one came and I lost all my money, which thankfully hasn't happened, but if it did, to know that you have that backstop makes an enormous difference in the arts. It really does. So, you know, I'm very lucky that way. I don't really get much CNZ funding at all, and I'm sort of fine with that. They've started to take away the funding to the people that put my shows on. Like, I don't get funding to put on, to bring up a show, which a lot of people do, because I never get it. And I'm like, I'm actually in a fortunate position where I don't really need that, but I still need the vehicles to actually perform the shows that I have gotten up. So that's another conversation. But yes, so I have always, like, I just did this show in Christchurch, and my mother has been on the Court Theatre Supporters Committee for 30 something years.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing as well, to have a mother who's so actively involved in theatre and loves going to theatre. You can be what you can see, right? And I went to the Court Theatre from a really young age. And mum said, she wrote this introduction, excuse me, wrote this introduction for the Court Supporters newsletter that was like, we knew we were in for a good time when she was always putting on shows. You know, I think I was like at 3 or 4, I was like putting on shows and all this sort of stuff. And I started ballet when I was 4. And I think I got like my first laugh when I was eating like a polystyrene cheese. I can still remember the smell of it, but it, like as a mouse, and I had to go through a mouse hole and I knocked it over. Which I believe caused much merriment and mirth. And I was like, oh, I like that noise. And yeah, and then whenever I did dance, I did dancing for 12 years. And I was always the comedy roles. You know, I was always the frog, not the swan, and stuff like that. Jeremy Fisher frog. And I just enjoyed like making people laugh. And so then I got to high school and I started doing theater sports at school. And I also started doing, I was in drama. I did drama and got to university and did drama. So yeah, I knew from a young age, I wanted to be an actor. And then I auditioned for drama school. As I said, I went to London, spent 3 years not doing any performance and went a little mad. I was a waitress, which is in itself a little bit of a performance, and ended up as a receptionist for the Conservative Party. Hilarious. Could not be more opposite to my politics. I was less political then, but I was like, and it was a temp job. The guy said to me, so why do you want, what did he say? What do you know about the Conservative Party? That's right. It was like an interview, which you never have for temp jobs, but they'd had a terrible temp before me. And they said, what do you know about the Conservative Party? And it was 98 or something. And I went, you lost.
And you got the job.
Yeah. He was like, we did very well at a local government level. I mean, I don't know, Tony Blair's in, you lost. That's all I know. And so they liked my organizational skills and chutzpah, I believe. And because I was talking to lords, I didn't give a shit, right? I'm from New Zealand. I don't give a fuck who you are or what this is in front of your name. I'm not going to give you any more deference than anybody else. So that was quite, and I once made a joke that William Hague had tried to get in touch with the leader of the local conservative group. And he rang him and he was like, did you ring me? And he went, no, because I'd made a joke. So that's funny. Anyway, and then I got back to New Zealand and got into this Midsummer Night's Dream, which was great. A lot of people auditioned and not many people got in, but then I didn't get a part that I wanted. And then I just was trying to get parts and I couldn't. And then that's when I started getting put up for parts of The Fat Girl and stuff like that, because I was a bit heavier then indeed. And so it was like, This part is for someone to do gymnastics on a beam, and the ad is for reinforced wood.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, but it's fucked. Like, what man wrote that, you know? And then the other one was a ballroom dancing nurse that this particular doctor, who was also my flatmate at the time, he didn't want to dance with this nurse because she was too fat. That was the storyline.
Okay.
And I didn't get that part, but then the woman that got that part, I was like, I'm fatter than her. I should have had that. And then in about 2005, so I got back to New Zealand in 98, and I had an agent and I was trying, you know, and I was doing my shows. By this point, I'd started doing comedy, which is the best vehicle to being self-sufficient in the arts is to write your own material. Mm. If you're lucky enough to be able to do that, because I've also realized that not everyone can do that. So I'm lucky to be able to have that talent to write an interesting story. But 2005, I was dieting like nobody's business, constantly dieting. I've been dieting since I went on Jenny Craig when I was 18, and I was on Jenny Craig for 6 months, and I managed to lose 4 kilos in 6 months, which was soul destroying, you know, like, and they were always like, only eat when you're hungry. And I'm like, I'm always fucking hungry. I only ate when I was hungry. I was watching Oprah, and Oprah's like, when you're overweight, there's something deep inside that's holding you back. And I'm like, I've been very fortunate again, very lucky not to have had any. I went to a Catholic school, but there was no nefarious interferences. You know, because you're like, what is it? Like, yeah, I've got some insulin, but, you know, I'm quite confident. I'm just hungry. I only eat when I'm hungry, and I'm 77 kilos. So it wasn't, you know, like, enormous, but it was just enough to not be considered for any roles of, you know, apart from the character fat girl sort of roles. Mm. And then I went to a weight loss specialist after I tried Jenny Craig again, and it budged for a little bit, but then not at all. And she said I had to eat less feta and olive oil.
Full circle. Now we're eating it, and that's the recommended diet for
the Mediterranean diet. Wasn't even eating that much of it. And I just was like, this is fuck, this can't be it. And then just one day, because when I was 16, I had an epileptic seizure in school assembly. Good place to have your first seizure.
Well done, Penny. Yes, that's quite the show.
Yes. Yeah. Happily, my school didn't have any bitches in my year. Anyway, there were no bitches in my school, which I think is unusual. So nobody gave me shit about it. Everyone was very sympathetic. But I started taking these pills called Tegretol Retard, which is also a lovely name for a pill to give to a 16-year-old. Here's your Tegretol Retard. It just means slow release, but you're like, well, this is nice. Anyway, and so then I was putting on weight all through this time, and I was like, oh, it's because I'm 16. It's because I'm 17. I went to Germany on exchange for a few months, and it's like, oh, I was eating the food, and now I've put on weight, and I just can't seem to budget for ages. And then I, one day, just 2005, so that was 1990, so it was like 16 years after that I finally changed it, but I Googled Tegretol weight gain, and all this stuff came up, and I was like, what the fuck? Why has no doctor, no weight loss, no Jenny Craig, nobody has ever asked me about this?
So what medication you were on, yeah.
Exactly. And so the medication I was on promoted me being hungry. So that's why I was hungry all the time. That's why when my mother was saying, have a piece of fruit, which is the most annoying thing to say to somebody who's starving. You know, it's not going to touch a mandarin. It's not going to help with the cravings that I have in my pits right now. And it was like that. You get to like 3 o'clock and you're like, ah, I just need something, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was doing Europe and stuff, and you're tripping around and like, you're like, okay, I'll have a gelato. That's
absolutely.
Yeah,
have the gelati, have the pizza, have the experience, right?
Yeah, well, except when I first did Europe, I was 22 and I was doing it on 20 pounds a day.
Oh, yeah, you could.
Including accommodation.
Yeah.
So I didn't eat much. I had a lot of bread and cheese, but I saw a lot of pictures and monuments and things. But anyway, so then I booked in to see a neurologist, and it took 9 months to see a neurologist. I'd been contemplating liposuction and stuff, because then I went to see him anyway, and he was like, oh, yeah, we can totally change you to this medication, lamotrigine, which is much less likely to do that. And so I went on to that. I couldn't drive for 6 months, which is a big deal. Mm. Again, I'm lucky. I've got so much wrong with me. I've got like 5 chronic conditions, but none of them wildly inhibit my life. Like, I know like a friend of mine's just got post-COVID epilepsy. Horrendous.
Oh no. So she had COVID and now she has epilepsy.
Yeah. She's like 44. She's never had a seizure in her life. Yeah. And now she's on giant amounts of, I can't remember the name, it's temazepam or something like that, like 1,000 milligrams twice a day. And I'm on 100 milligrams twice a day. So I haven't had a seizure since I've only had 3 big seizures in my life, but I've been on the medication ever since. And I've just been deeply fortunate. And then the change, it was fine. But then Pharmac tried to do a generic lamotrigine. So that was another fight about medication and stuff with Pharmac. But anyway, so I changed and I lost weight. Not a huge amount. Like, you know, I'm generally 71, 72. It was just enough for me to, when I was 16, I went to get jeans from Pants for Pants, the very originally titled place in Christchurch. And I was trying on, I think it was the 16, I guess, or it maybe even been the 14 at that point. And I said, oh, can I get the next size up? And they said, they don't make them.
Oh.
Yeah. And when you're 16. At that age,
yeah.
That shit gets in too. It gets in deep.
Penny, can I just ask a question? So at 16 and having had this experience with epilepsy and then the medication that causes the weight gain, was that the first time that you'd actually thought about your body shape or weight, or was there anything before that?
No, there was something before that because
as a dancer, and I think that we share this, there was quite a focus on the way you presented yourself, and there were parts that you can do about that and there are things that you can't.
I'll do that. That was the main issue.
Oh, is that your boobs?
That's my boobs. That's my boobs. So like I look
she
like
a wall. She has clothes on, by the way.
Yeah, but I do look like a wall of tit sometimes walking towards you. Yes, I was a D cup by 12, age 12.
Okay, that's challenging.
Yeah. Especially for ballet, you know, like that sort of stuff. It was just like, jumping up and down.
Thanks
and
my demonstration.
And my ballet teacher would say things to me like, oh, you have such a wonderful expression. If only I could give you a different body.
Okay, well, that's going to get in, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. So she did not help at all. I had another teacher who was much better, who was much more promoting of the comedy and the character stuff that I did. And then in fifth form, I was in Guys and Dolls at school. So this was before I took the meds. So yeah, it was definitely starting before that as well. But because the thing is, that was when I was still doing that 80s diet that my parents, you know, like the chips and all that sort of stuff, but we didn't know that much about healthy eating. This is 89.
Yeah.
You know, it was only really sort of starting then. Mm-hmm. So then when I started dieting, you know, there was a bit of success because I was mitigating the eating patterns that I used to have, but then I just couldn't get past any sort of point. But I've got some diary entries. Oh my God, they're just tragic. Like one says, and I know this is going to maybe offend some people because it's a little insensitive, but it says, this girl at school, the fifth form anorexic, went back to hospital today. I don't understand her. She's beyond my comprehension, but at least she's not fat like me.
Well, okay. Well, that's really confronting because that actually sums up teenage angst around body shape, and I don't think it's changed that much.
I don't have children, but I have talked to some young women, and it doesn't feel like it's changed that much at all, which is, and you know, the 2000s were terrible. The early 2000s were like, you know, there was the ladette culture, you can do whatever you want, but Paris Hilton, skinny Paris Hilton's boyfriend leaks their sex tape, nothing to do with her, and then the world turns on her and calls her a slut.
Yeah.
You know, Monica Lewinsky was the slut, despite being a very young woman completely taken advantage of by a man with so much more power. You have Weinstein going around. You have like the wonderful Pamela Anderson documentary that was just on Netflix.
Oh, brilliant. I loved it. Yeah.
Where her sex tape was stolen and disseminated, sorry to use that word, but and then she is the one again that is called a slut, and it just, and I had quite a lot of slut shaming during in the comedy industry in the early 2000s as well, you know, because it was a bit of a slut and who cares? Woohoo! And I think that actually comes back to the fact that I was a bit skinnier and finally people were looking at me and taking interest. Like university, I was shagging all over the place because I could, because people wanted to. And I didn't really, you know, and I also don't have any sort of hang-ups about casual sex. I look at it like coffee. I prefer real coffee, but if there's instant around, I'll take it and not be too complaining about it.
That was back then, just reiterating.
Well, I mean, fuck it. Even if I wasn't married now, I think I would be still feeling like that. But I do like being married and having infrequent sex with my husband.
If you aren't a fan of shopping, but you're okay with online shopping and you like to look into recommendations from trusted sources, then check out my shopping lists that I host on Benable. Benable is an online store that lets you save items that you use and you can recommend to others all in one space. I've got shopping lists for menopause products, tools and resources that I use to build my business, healthy foods I love to eat, and travel recommendations. Setting up your own online store is by invite only. So I've added my invite code in the show notes. It's a bit addictive and heaps of fun. Did I forget to mention that it's also a great way to share your affiliate links so that when a shopper buys from your store, you get a cut of the sale, all because you recommended it.
So check out Benable.
A whole other topic. Hey, yeah. I just want to jump on that 2000s thing, because I think that, so the audience has probably been with me for a couple of years now through the podcast, and I don't think I've really spoken about my personal experience with body dysmorphia. I think probably people see me as this fitness person that kind of knows exactly what she's doing. I dish out a lot of advice, you know, it's like it comes from a place of, you know, science, and it's no BS, right?
But, and knowledge. Yeah, you have knowledge.
Yeah, I've spent time, and make
you're
sure
you're in the industry.
I'm in the industry. Yeah. So while I was in the industry in the 2000s, I spent a decade competing in Miss Fitness and bodybuilding style shows that rely on you having low body fat, lean muscle tissue, striation, six pack. And it became a thing where when I wasn't competing, it felt like people didn't pay any attention to me. And when I was competing, the compliments would be flowing and, oh my God, you look amazing, blah, blah, blah. And when you get up on stage and you get all the accolades and then you get the trips overseas and all the sponsorship that comes with it. So all that affirmation around how my body had to look to get recognized or, you know, feel good about myself went on for about 10 years. And a big part of that is the diet, right? So the diet means that you're in extreme calorie restriction, particularly with carbohydrates. So there'll be a couple of weeks leading up to a show where you literally can't remember your address or your name. And you're just trying to get, you're so depleted. I don't remember being hungry, because it just got to a point where you train your body to only take on X amount of fuel, and you spend that time with that fuel training. The rest of the time is like trying to get through the personal training session for somebody else, you know? So I did this for 10 years. When I think back on that, I look at all the amazing things that I got out of it. Discipline, understanding of my body, helping other people lose weight, getting overseas trips, having this kind of title around being an expert in this space. Like, there's a lot of really cool stuff. But it lasted with me for 5 years after I stopped, where I couldn't literally get through a meal without counting the calories.
Yeah, wow.
So that's actually, that for me, when I look back on it now, I think, wow, I wasted a lot of time, you know? And,
And also it's really bad for your heart, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the dehydration.
I mean, at least I was quite young, and I don't think that I have, you know, I think I've probably been able to make up for it now, especially full focus on future health. Like, I always think about, what does my future look like now?
Yeah.
Heart health, bone health, you know, my bucket list is massive and I need to be really healthy, and I try to help people understand that. But I think it is challenging when you see a person that probably doesn't have any major weight challenges trying to tell you, hey, it's a mindset shift. So I do really empathize with people that are struggling, you know, with weight gain, especially during midlife.
And like, bodybuilding is crazy. Like, that to me is a dysmorphia as well, right? Like, to 100%. The whole other level where, you look like a chiseled sculpture. But I mean, like, and that's the thing too, is like, for me, you know, I was dieting like a motherfucker. I was going to the gym 6 days a week. I was doing Body Attack, also Les Mills, even though I haven't been to Les Mills for a year and a half because of COVID. I've just still got my membership because I'm on a check, because I've been a member since 98, but I was actually a member from 92 for a few years as well.
You're so a lifetime member.
I am. Well, I wish I'd bought one of those. They were selling those. It was $1,500. Imagine.
Yeah, but I don't think that they've honored it. Anyway, we won't.
Oh, have they not? Yeah. Oh, that's a whole other conversation. Right. Okay. Because it was very cheap, but it wasn't in 1992.
No.
But anyway, but for me to get, I just could never get to that without utterly starving myself, and it's just the dehydration and stuff as well from that too. You know, because you don't drink water for 2 days beforehand or something, do you?
Yeah, it's like minimal sips of water to really tighten the skin,
and then exactly, because influx, it's shrinking.
Yeah, then you influx the carbs to push the muscle out even further against the skin. So it's a real science. I mean, that's one of the things I kind of enjoyed about it, the science and the tweaking. But then it's like, so, it's all you think about. It's so self-absorbed.
Yeah, that's what I like Nikki Pellegrino's book, and she said it in my podcast as well, that she could have powered a small nation with the amount of effort she put into weight loss and thinking about it. And see, this is what happened to me just recently. just out of nowhere, so I put on this dress that I usually wear, and I was like, what the fuck is this spare tire happening around the middle? And that had never happened to me before. Hmm. And because I've been like, because I'm 49, right? And I've been like, it's like, because, you know, I'm a bit hot at the moment, but I'm wearing some synthetic fibers and I had a coffee. So I'm like, no, I don't think this is a hot flush because no. I've heard what they are and it's not this. But because I'm not really, I just perimenopausal with my periods. Basically, that's the only thing that's happening. But I'm like the whole time going, is this? And anyway, so then all this weight came and I got really depressed for a couple of days, just going over a bit longer than that, just going, fuck. See, this is the thing that's terrified me because I've been so focused on it, like, for my earlier years. Funny, on my podcast, a lot of people like Jackie Clark is like, oh, you know, we used to look back and think we were so beautiful. And I was like, nah, that's not my experience. It's the other way around. So yeah. I really came into myself and how I felt in my late 20s, early 30s, to being comfortable with myself. I mean, I was 31 when I changed that medication. But I've been like 72 kilos solid for the last nearly 20 years. You know, like I've hardly moved, which has been good.
It's healthy. Yeah.
It didn't matter how much I dieted or how much I didn't, nothing changed. And then all of a sudden I went and I was 74 kilos. And I was like, the thought of having to go back into the mindset of, like, I didn't eat cheese for 10 years. Cheese is great.
Awesome.
I know, particularly cheddar, tasty cheddar cheese. Yeah. I didn't eat that for a decade. Like, my friend said she had a dream once and we were going out and they had cake, but she said, but you didn't have any.
In her dream.
And then my other flatmate, I was talking about, you know, like being obsessed with weight loss, and she went, yeah, all those salads. And yeah. So she summed up her flatting experience with me was all those salads. Oh. So, and now my husband doesn't like salad for a main meal, which drives me crazy. So the thought of having to go back into being so obsessed like that. But then what I started doing was I started having smoothies for lunch, protein smoothies and stuff, which, you know, are tasty. And I started doing, because I haven't been going to the gym, I usually do spin classes. But so I was going for these runs, but like run walks, because I don't really, and I was trying to do it really minimal impact because I often pull muscles. Yeah. I think that could be to do with getting older, but also this blood sort of situation that I had going on. And then I pulled a fucking calf muscle, but I managed to lose the 2 kilos, which I've
you
never really
changed things
managed
up
to
a
do.
Bit. You changed okay. it up. You just changed it up a bit. You increased your protein levels a little bit more so that you were full from that meal, your protein shake. And then, you just increased your activity to something that you weren't doing before. So just changing it up. It's good.
Yeah. And I do, and I have, where are they? They're not here.
You got some weights.
My weights. They must be somewhere else. They're in the lounge room because I watch television doing my 4 kilo weights. And actually, I'm probably more buff here than I have been for ages because, you know, often I'll just do a spin class and then some weights, but I've been doing, and also 4 kilo weights are quite heavy for biceps and triceps and all that sort of stuff. So I've been enjoying doing that, watching the Great British Sewing Bee and some other things like that. I'm like, oh, look at those zigzag edges, you know?
Multitasking at its finest, looking after your health and learning something at the same time. I love it.
Yeah. Because I am very healthy generally with how I eat and stuff because it's byproducts of being so obsessed for so long. But, you know, I'm like, I will have a date scone. Bugger it, you know, and I will. But I always have a scone rather than a cake because it has less sugar in it, you know, and just stuff like that. But I like scones.
Yeah, I like scones. Hey, so I was just telling you before we got interviewing, before I pushed, you know, record, about the Gwyneth Paltrow video that came out last week that went viral. And, you know, you mentioned you hadn't seen it, and that's not a bad thing. So, and it really got me thinking a lot. I was thinking about it a lot last week, and I was really looking forward to catching up with you to talk about sort of body dysmorphia in midlife. And I do feel that we are so conditioned as Generation X woman that to be on some kind of diet. And when we hit perimenopause, and, you know, you've just highlighted that you've noticed a little change yourself, the belly around, you know, the extra layer around your belly.
Yep.
It's so common. Like 4 out of 5 women will experience this type of weight gain. It is due to insulin resistance because estrogen levels are dropping. So once you understand that from a physiological perspective, I think there's a level of kindness we can bring to ourselves, you know? But
it's hard though, right? Like when for me,
super hard.
But it's also super hard that I was doing that for so long and then have reached the stasis of being reasonably happy for 20 years. And then, you know, I think for a lot of people that, yes, they've all been dieting and stuff, but all those people were skinny as youths, you know, and then suddenly having kids and stuff and things changed that. But for me, I was so unhappy. Like my diary is like there's that one, but the other one is like, I can't believe I'm epileptic when I have my seizure. First, I'm fat. Second, not particularly attractive. And now this. Like, that was
what
was... Look
at you now. Thank you. Out. You're a stunner.
Thank you very much. But yeah, it was like...
Come into your own in midlife.
Yeah. Right? You know, I get Botox. I get Botox now, like, because I hated the bags under my eyes that were forming when I smiled. So, you know, so it's this weird feminist, you know, you want to say, fuck it, and I'm not going to blah, 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 and who cares if I've got wrinkles, I'll be like Frances McDormand, but, you know, like, but then you just deep level feel that you want to do something to, for yourself too. It's not, the male gaze for me, it's about the female gaze in the mirror.
Yeah, it's when you wake up in the mirror and you can see it for yourself, like I completely understand.
It's like when you look down when you're taking a selfie, it's the most horrifying, you're like, I am 93 years old, and then you look up into the sun and go like this and years old. So it's all about the camera angle basically.
Absolutely.
Close I am to the light that I have just here. So
so getting back to the Gwyneth video, so I'll frame that so that everyone can understand that I'm not keeping something secret from them. Gwyneth was being interviewed by her doctor, and I just want to clarify that her doctor was not a medical doctor, it was a health coach, holistic naturopath style doctor, and while they do have training for that role, it's not medical training.
Can they use the word doctor actually?
Yeah, because anyone that's had a PhD can use the word doctor.
It's PhD, right? Yeah. Okay,
so
PhD,
just be aware of that.
But then, you know, a PhD is something, so
it is something, and it's actually on my bucket list. I have all these things that I want to study, and this is actually one of the topics I want to do, which is body dysmorphia midlife. Like, I want to really go there with the topic and find out where people are at, where they think. Anyway, that's another thing, bucket list thing. Back to Gwyneth. Round three. So she's being interviewed by him on a podcast. She's sitting there, she has an IV in her arm because she's having IV vitamins and minerals, and she's explaining her day, and her day means that she does a nice little intermittent fast. That's what she describes it as, which we find out is about 18 hours long, which is pretty long for a fast.
That's not intermittent either. That's mainly fasting.
That's mostly fasting. Yeah.
Is that every day?
Every day.
Yeah, that's not intermittent. That's just depriving yourself of substance.
Not eating. Yeah. But she's got the IV, so we're good. And then she says she only has a coffee in the morning because it helps with regulate her blood sugar. Not sure about that. And then the first thing meal of the day is a bone broth soup. And that's where I was absolutely floored. And then her evening meal, she says, I mostly eat keto, but I just eat a heap of vegetables. So when I kind of added up the calories, we were looking at like not more than 800 calories a day.
And you need 2,000, don't you? Isn't that the
thing? Minimum 2,000. And, you know, it just obviously depends on your energy levels. It depends on your current weight situation. It depends on any health implications that you have. So everybody is different, but baseline minimum 2,000 for nutrient dense quality for your body, you know, for your body
protein?
To be healthy.
Where's the protein?
The protein? Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, it went crazy, and I just felt like that is absolutely feeding into that diet mentality that we're trying to move away from, help midlife women reset the mind that menopause is a pause. It's a moment where you get to go, you know what? That stuff's not working for me anymore. I've got the rest of my life to look forward to. What do I need to do right now? And what changes should I be making that's going to have lasting implications on my health? And I know that they're not instant fixes, that this is just a step-by-step foundation building of my bones and my muscles and my heart health and my mental clarity and all these little things that I'm going to do now on a day-to-day basis. Yeah, I'm not going to see an instant 2 kilogram weight loss in 1 week, but I'm going to live longer. I'm going to get to see my family, you know, have their dreams discovered. So
yeah, like she's not living longer. She just feels like she is because it's misery.
Yeah, but she's a billionaire. She can do what she likes.
That's it. She can afford to get IV, you know, vitamins, which is just, I mean, the whole, I'm, this whole bill that's trying to go through Parliament in New Zealand at the moment, which is a regulation of the vitamin and natural industries, which I think is really good and needs to be regulated. There's so much completely spurious claims. It's like this post-truth world, like Trump can make all this bullshit up and so can people going scientifically proven. Whereas, yeah, you know, vitamins, there's fuck all proof around vitamins at all. It's just expensive piss, basically, excuse me. You know, it just blows my mind. And I know that some people, like my husband, he complains we don't eat enough red meat. I'm like, we're avoiding colorectal cancer and we're helping the planet. So you can take some vitamin B12 supplements because we don't eat enough red meat, you know, like, so that, yes, that is something that makes sense because he needs it. But just for general, like multivitamins and all those ones for women's, I don't know. The thing is too, the placebo effect is real. It's something like 20%, crazy with the placebo effect. But I don't think it will ever work on me because I'm so deeply cynical about anything. And have you had this, when you start doing a menopause podcast, suddenly you get emails from all over the world from people that will be so good on your podcast to sell them something.
Oh, 100%. But they're selling me a lifestyle program.
Yeah.
When I create a lifestyle program.
Especially for you. You're actually like, I'm selling nothing and I'm determined to sell nothing, basically, apart from knowledge and women's stories. Yeah. So, and so I'm like, no, I'm not going to, like, I had two. They did sound quite fun, ladies, but they're running a menopause retreat in Bali. And could we talk about that? I'm like, nah.
Okay, the only way you're going to talk about it is if they fly you there.
Yeah, maybe.
And that's the deal.
even then, like, because I hate yoga. I hate all that. Like, it's not for me. All that staying still and breathing is not what I'm into. You know, like, I'm much more about pumping and music and stuff. So,
hey, Penny, let's revisit this conversation in about 5 years.
Okay.
Now, I was like that too. I was like, I couldn't think of anything worse than staying still and stretching my muscles into poses that had weird names, but you know,
I do child pose at the end of doing press ups and things like that, so there's some child pose there.
There's a start and take 10 deep breaths for stress reduction, and that's a start, you know.
Yeah, it's funny, like, I've never had anxiety at all, so that's something that, you know, like, is that gonna happen, you know, like, because I know that's the one that's driven me the most crazy, that was never told to people. So that there's been this absolute waste of time of people on antidepressants and feeling stigmatized. Not that there's anything wrong with having mental health issues, obviously, but it's like a complete misdiagnosis around, you know, like Marion Keyes, I don't know if this has happened yet, she wrote a book in her late 40s about, I've never had depression before and anxiety, but suddenly I've got it. And then just recently I've gone, that was probably menopause that she just had no idea about.
Yeah. It's no surprise to me. This is where I do a little confession. So I kickstarted a TikTok account originally in lockdown with my daughter so that, you know, we could do some bonding. She was being a real shit at that age. She was about 15. And so, you know, I kind of thought, oh, I'll do TikTok. We'll have some fun together. And it was a lockdown, you know, thing to do. And it brought a bit of joy. I love to dance. Yeah, it was cool. When I moved back to New Zealand, I didn't really use it. I didn't use my TikTok account. I was like, I don't need to dance here. I'm free. I have a walk on the beach. I'm good. But I changed it up to talk about menopause stuff. And it's suddenly gone, it's overtaken all my other social media accounts, which blew my mind. I've learned a lot about TikTok since. I've learned things about te reo, culture, marketing, ADHD. Like, I've learned so much good stuff through TikTok, which is very interesting. And now I'm like putting aside my judgment that it's just for younger people. But the thing is, the top comments for one of the posts that I have, which has over 130,000 views, the top comment is, I started at 38. I started at 39. I think this is perimenopause and I'm only 40. So that is blowing my mind that I'm getting that much response from much, much younger women saying, everything you've described has been me for the last couple of years. Do you think it's perimenopause? And of course, you know, I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to say yes or no, because it could be hypothyroidism, it could be anything else, but I am going to say, now's the time to investigate. Yes. Now's the time to educate yourself, because if you're already asking the question and you're only 38, 39, then you're going to find out and you're not going to have the psychological damage that I had with anxiety for 3 years without knowing about it.
Exactly. Like, you know? I have been infuriated, like, in infuriated, particularly around medical training. You know, 51% of the population is guaranteed to go through this, and you get one afternoon fucking workshop in med school about menopause when it affects, you know, what is it, like 80, I don't know how many estrogen receptors we have in our body. That is just the hugest.
Everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in our bloody salivary glands, just everywhere. And the fact that they're not taught about it, and that there's still, like, I had a talking to an older woman in that they were in that cohort that was completely screwed by the WHI study being misinterpreted. Yeah. And her doctor was like, she was on HRT, she did get on it, but then the doctor was like, it's time for you to come off now. You've been on it too long, come off. So she's
sorry,
come off
laughing.
And then, yeah. And then it all came back, and her doctor's like, you can't go on it again now, which isn't necessarily true, you know. Yeah. So, and you just believe the doctor. And of course, the doctors, you know, I can sometimes think the doctors have been dealt a disservice as well. Yeah. But I do think that if you even hearing some of this stuff as a GP, you should be looking into it as a matter of respect to your woman in your, you know, because women have been ignored so long around, you know, seatbelt testing. They did that on men, just all this sort of shit, particularly the medications. People have died because they didn't get it right for women because they didn't test them on women, because hormones makes it so difficult. Mm. Even though, and this is what I come back to in my podcast, I bang on and on and on about it. It's the very process that peoples the world. It's the only thing that keeps the human race going is our hormone ridden bodies. Yes, we need some sperm, but you know, like, we are the ones that make the world, so afford us some bloody respect. I mean, I haven't, you've bred, I have no interest in doing to do that, but you know, it is that very symptom, and it's been held us down from people. Not, you know, we weren't allowed to talk about our periods for a long time. Happily that's changed, except in America, aka a totalitarian bullshit state. You know, pregnant women had to stay at home. Like, it's, you know, as soon as you got married, you had to quit your job in like the 60s and stuff. Pregnant women were disgusting and should hide themselves, and now the last taboo is menopause. So, but it's the beginning, the middle, and the end of the menstrual cycle that peoples the world, and it's been the very thing that's used as a cudgel to keep women down, and like, that can go fuck itself.
Yeah. And we might just wrap it up with that final
ranty rant. Yes,
and the curtain's closed.
There we go.
No, and I love it. Yeah. Your energy and your perspective, and I think a lot of women will share a lot of your thoughts, and you know, how you feel it. I mean, I'm hearing it every day. You're probably hearing it every day, these conversations around, you know, why didn't we know, and why isn't more being done? And we're that loud generation. We will, you know, go, come on, let's get shit done. Let's make a difference.
And I do think it's that thing, you know, that Gen X is used to having information at our fingertips, and we've, you know, we're not digital natives, but we were digital teenagers, you know, sort of thing. So, you know, we're used to that. And then to suddenly find that there's this a whole thing that has completely ruined it for us. Not told us. It's just astonishing.
Thank you, Penny. I just want to leave you with, is there one last message that you want to share with the audience around maybe your body or accepting your body? Because you're obviously super comfortable. You're a beautiful woman. You're highly successful in what you do. You bring joy to so many people through your performances. Is there any last words that you'd like to give here on Sexy Aging?
I think it's just the sloughing off of the imposter syndrome and the giving less fucks. And also, I'm so fucking sick of people saying that women shouldn't swear. And I'm going to leave you with a quote, because I'm obviously quite sweary, as you know, you could have made your points without swearing. But as somebody in the comedy scene, I will tell you that a laugh can be elicited so much more, you know, with a well-placed, if you use it all the time, it becomes very tedious. But with a well-placed swear word, we'll get a laugh when it wouldn't otherwise. But the Scientific American has said that those who are particularly vulgar may also be particularly eloquent and intelligent.
Yes.
So good is what I say to that. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to today's episode. I'd love to hear what you thought, so feel free to answer in the questions in Spotify or give your feedback in Apple Podcasts, and follow the podcast so you'll receive notifications for new episodes. And stay sexy.